I'm thirsty. Just think how many times you hear that when you're at the sports field with your kids or out on a hot summer hike or just driving around in the car. Water is obviously a go-to, but have you ever thought about healthy hydration? Element is a zero-sugar electrolyte drink mix born from the growing body of research revealing that optimal health outcomes occur at sodium levels 2 to 3 times government recommendations. Electrolyte deficiency or imbalance can cause headaches, cramps, fatigue, brain fog, and weakness. Element helps anyone stay hydrated as each stick pack delivers a meaningful dose of electrolytes free of sugar, artificial colors, or other dodgy ingredients found in popular electrolyte and sports drinks. That's why Element is trusted and used by everyone from the Olympic weightlifting team, NFL and NBA players, Stanford neuroscientists, and everyday moms like me. Our kids actually fight over them. We keep the stick packs with us when we are on the go. They're super convenient. Head directly to our exclusive page at drinklmnt.com/1000hours to receive a free Element sample pack with any order. That's drinklmnt.com/1000hours to get your free sample pack with your order. Welcome to the 1000 Hours Outside podcast. My name is Jenny Urich. I'm the founder of 1000 Hours Outside, and back today, actually for the 4th time, y'all love her, you've all requested her, my friend and midwife, Beth Barbeau. Welcome.
Oh, thanks for having me again, Jenny. I love being here.
I love it when you're here, and I know everyone loves your voice. People talk about it all the time. Your voice is calming. I said you should have some sort of like meditation app or something. I think everyone would buy that. But we're going to start off by telling people an idea that we have, and people can join in because you and I are friends, and you know, a lot of the authors that I connect with, I can barely get an hour of their time. Sometimes I wait for years. But since we're friends, we can do this often, which is a fantastic thing because people love listening to you. But we are starting an Ask the Midwife question spot. So if you've got questions, I think everybody has questions they want to ask a midwife, partially because midwives have been in a lot of different homes, and especially you come in for this postpartum care. You've seen a lot of different families. You've had families where you've delivered babies, you know, and siblings. And so you've known families for very long periods of time. So you just have this knowledge that I think has been lost along the way. And a lot of times we don't have that, maybe like we used to with aunts and grandmothers and things like that. So ask the midwife, and I'm going to put a link in the show notes that will be on your website for people to go, and they can, whenever, you know, whenever you hear this, it doesn't matter if you listen to it the week that it comes out or it's a month later or a year later, we are going to keep that spot up for you, and you'll find the link in the show notes. And if you've got some questions, and then that will give us some guides for the future. If there are specific things that you are interested in, really about the whole span of life, like you're talking about birth and prenatal care and even pre-prenatal care, but then also all the way through end of life, you cover all of those different things. So if people have just questions on life and love and pregnancy and family, they can do that in the Ask the Midwife section. And the link will be there. That's kind of exciting. I'm super excited about it.
I love this idea. People have been asking it and they have so many questions. It will be really fun to put it together and be connecting even more personally than just you and I do at our conferences and our care spots and all that.
Mm-hmm. One of the things we said is we should just tape our conversations like when we meet up at the diner. Maybe one day we'll do that.
We seem to cover all the stuff, you know, and we're covering all the stuff that we're seeing online. So I think it'll be great. It's the thing that I enjoy the most. I have this thing on my Instagram right now called Monday Mythbusters. So some, you know, life is life, but most Mondays I'm getting up one of the questions that people have brought up of, but what about that? Is that true? And addressing it, bringing up the research and finding out that people are really afraid and going on information that it's like that when it pops up on the Instagram somehow it or Facebook that it's now true. Somehow this is our new Britannica, you know, our new encyclopedia, but it's not. And there's a lot of shoveling the information around from person to person, and it becomes true because they've heard it a bunch. So it's fun to set things straight.
Yeah. And it's tricky because there is so much information. So everyone, all the parents are wading through this glut of information, which on one hand is great. And then on the other hand can be very confusing. In my particular situation, one of the myth busters was that I had preeclampsia for my first and then starting to get there for the second. And I was with just a regular MD and an OBGYN, right? That's what it's called. It's been a long time since then. And they were like nice and whatever, but I had this preeclampsia. I had to collect my pee in a jug. That was fun. And they said, well, there's nothing you can do about it. You know, it's just one of those things. We don't know why it happens. And, you know, you can put your feet up and eat watermelon. That was basically, I think, what they told me. I can't, it was like trying to get my swelling down. Really, it was about the symptoms.
Yeah, they told you to avoid salt.
Right, because you're trying to get your swelling down. And then when I came to you, you were like, oh, this is why this happens. And as the baby grows, you know, it's hard for your liver to keep up with all of the things that are, and here are some things that you can do. And it was easy and it changed immediately. And so this is a myth buster. I think the myth of there's nothing you can do. That was the big myth. And it turned out there was things that I could do. And it made a big difference because we ended up having a C-section for our first because it had to be induced and the whole thing, you know how that goes. But we are talking about a different topic today that stopped me in my tracks a little bit. Your kids went to Waldorf school for a little while and we definitely connect over Kim John Payne and his book, Simplicity Parenting. In fact, you even heard him speak, didn't you?
Several times. No, yeah, back in the day when he was, before his book came out.
Wow.
Oh, golly, he was so holy. That's kind of what made me just want to be the president of his fan club. He was so hilarious and he could pin all of our little righteous, groovy, trying to do just the right thing. It just made me laugh so hard. It brought a lot of change. He saved us. I was really starting to yell at my kids a lot and didn't like it, but I was stuck. And what I heard him talk about with discipline and how to get up close to them and then start to back up with your directions and stuff, it completely changed our day, which kind of speaks to what we're talking about today.
Yes.
In fact, yes. Which has to do with like, how do we have rhythms? And
yes. And that, yeah, a lot of that comes from him. And if people are interested, he does. We just talked about it. Actually, it was the last thing I talked about with Kim John Payne. He came out with a book called The Soul of Discipline. And he said, a lot of times kids are just, they're pinging us. Like they're just, they're dysregulated, I guess. So a lot of times, like you said, it's trying to work with that regulation. And one of those things is connecting with them. And he would talk about how they don't understand. Like in 5 minutes, we're leaving. He's like, they have no concept of what that is. And so you have to really get into their space. So if people want more information about that, his books are fantastic. But one of the things that you and I had talked about is that rhythm is so helpful in family life. And one of the episodes we talked about is how do you make it through summer? And that's sort of on the horizon here. It's always exciting, but summer can be also like, oh, I can't wait for my kids to go back to school, that type of thing. And rhythm is something that you and I have always talked about as something that's super helpful. And then as I thought about it more, I was like, oh, wait, you're a midwife. Like if anyone who has a non-rhythmic life, it would be a midwife. I mean, there's not much else like that where you're completely on call. And then to top it off, you went through a divorce when your boys were elementary-ish age, upper elementary, going through divorce. You don't have a large family to support you. Your mother had passed. Your sister was helping and she had passed. And so here we are sort of like, you know, on the surface talking about this thing of rhythm and it all sounds good. And then I just thought, wait a minute. How did she really have rhythm? And I think if people are listening in that we have excuses like, oh, my life is like this and nobody would understand. And how could I have rhythm because I have this, that, or the other thing. And here you are as a midwife on call, a single mom, not that much money, dealing with a divorce, dealing with death and loss in your family. And yet you still were able to provide some rhythm. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. And your boys have come out on the other end. They're adults. They're stable. Like they're really fun to be around. I always want to be around them. I'm like, are they going to be there? They probably think I'm super weird. But can we just start there? Like, tell us a little bit of your story. Like, I think someone would look at you. They see your Monday Mythbusters. You've got so much information. You always got your jewelry and so beautiful and put together. But you have had a hard road.
Yeah. You know, I think a lot of us feel like we've had a hard road for whatever reasons we have. I was thinking about this morning on my walk about us having this conversation and that, you know, one of my clients after one of our previous podcasts called and she was sort of distraught and she said, but how do you have rhythm if your life is not rhythmic? You know, she's a large animal vet. She's a farm woman. She's running around. Like, how do you not just be responding to things? And it was really bumpy. When my kids were sort of between 6 and 12, a whole bunch of things hit us at once. And I went through a business divorce with my business. I went through a personal divorce. It was really acrimonious. We had these losses more than you even were able to mention just then. So it was really kind of a gulf of everything changed at once. And I realized part of it is that I had held this vision. Like I had, the person who saved me was the people I babysat for. So for instance, I think that we have to know what rhythm feels like inside of us, or we have to know what we're questing towards. We have to have an idea. And I think that as we get into families now that have been raised with phones and the screens and a lot of that, the level of distraction, how apps pull us out of a daily life, that kind of thing, that we have to find, babies synchronize to their mothers or to their parents, children synchronize to the family rhythm. If we don't know how to have rhythm, we have to find it so that we can synchronize ourselves. So for me, I realized I thought it was sort of when I had kids that I started that, but it wasn't. It was when I was 12. I walked past this house in our neighborhood and a woman walked out on the porch and said, "Do you babysit?" And now I understand what it's like to be that mother going, "Is there a 12-year-old girl walking by?" And there were these three moms that lived within a block of each other, Marilyn, Maria, and Sam. And if you know them in Lake Orion, you know that these women are godsend to the world. And they were some of the original like outdoor play people. This was late 70s and or mid 70s. And they were so calming. They, you know, they felt like their lives were chaotic. It was little kids, but they had a sense of things and the rhythms. My household, I had a very my household was loving, but it also had problems. A lot of ours do, right? In my case, my mom was later diagnosed with bipolar and manic depression. My dad was depressed. And when you go back and look at the symptoms, oh, at my house, it was always the worst day ever or the best day ever. It was never a regular day. I didn't know how to have regular days. And I was really imprinted on this sort of catastrophic running around thing. And I went and hung out at Maria's and then babysat for her three kids. And I kind of got that rhythm. And a lot of the voice that people like in my voice is from Maria. Maria had gone to the Peace Corps, had worked with Mother Teresa's order in India. And she was the calming presence. And I got to synchronize to her. So my advice to people is, number one, if you don't know what rhythmic life is like, because you didn't get that at some point, we all have our reasons, then you might need to find a mom who's a little farther down the road, who kind of has some of that, not rigid things and perfect or whatever, just they know how to roll with it and take that imprint on. So it was pretty hard because there was a period where I had 10 and 12 year olds. I did not have any childcare. I was pretty low on money, the whole divorce thing. Options with dad at that point weren't really that viable for us. And I was struggling to piece it together. And I had to have rhythm in order to sort of hold the tapestry. Otherwise, we were going to unravel.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things, actually, what's interesting is we got to prepare for this podcast in person, which was a first for me and really special. Normally, I'm just doing that on my own. But it wasn't just you and me. You also pulled in one of your sons. And we talked about a lot of different things about what were his thoughts of his childhood, having this bumpy situation, and yet you are holding it together with a lot of these intentions. You had a lot of intentions and a lot of thought. I actually think that that goes a long way, right? It's that you had put thought into it and were not reacting. I think not just responding to things is what that woman had said when she called you. You weren't just responding. So one of the things that you had said to me, and I just actually started doing this right after, I mean, this is just very recent, was because our life is not very rhythmic. And I think that's what we want. It's like, I wish that there was this every single day, the schedule that we did, but we travel a lot for work. And there are a lot of different moving pieces, especially as the kids get older. That wasn't the thing I was expecting, as you're driving from this to that. And so there isn't really much of a routine. And yet one of the things that you talked about was laying it out for them, like letting them know, being really specific about this is what's coming. This is when we're going to come back together. So can you talk through that piece of it? Because I felt that that was very practical and helpful and something that I could implement immediately.
Yeah. So my long view from the very beginning was that I wanted to raise Renaissance kids. I wanted them to be Renaissance men. And to me, that meant that they would be really capable and durable, that they would be flexible, and they would be able to handle conversations responsibly with every strata of society, wealthy to street people, that they would be able to move through politics or neighbors or conflicts, that they would be healthy and sturdy. Like, so I had this picture of like, I hope they turn out like this. I was so scrambled, I never got to write it down, but I just kind of held this image. Like I've said it before, I think on your podcast, I saw that in my course as a babysitter, as a young woman, and then as a girl, really. And then I was a doula, I was a postpartum doula, I was a nanny. I was all these things where I was in people's homes. I saw that people, you know, they mostly really love their kids, of course, but some of them didn't seem to like their kids as much. They would have me serve hot dogs to the young ones, you know, at 5 o'clock. And then they would have me serve them salmon and pilaf at 7 while the kids watch TV. And that was always, it was always like, how are those kids going to learn how to have a conversation? How are they going to be guided? How are they going to have learn morals and conflict resolution? So I had this idea that I wanted my kids to be I wanted to like them. I wanted them to be my favorite people. And they are now. We're all very lucky because all of us are like, oh, they're here. You know, we enjoy their sense of humor and things. So I kept the long view. I want them to have that so that even when I was rushed, that became part of my tapestry that I would always include the thing that would help them gain another little bit of skill. And it doesn't just happen one time, right? It's constantly repetitive. So it what it looked like when they were, honestly, when they were 2 or 4, is that when we went to the grocery, we would get in line at Trader Joe's with the person who was checking us out that didn't look like us. You know, I look for people with different kinds of hair, different kinds of clothes, the person who was a dwarf, the person who had dreadlocks, the person who had blue hair, the person who didn't have blue hair, the person who was a male, the person who was a female, the ones who had piercings they hadn't seen before. I got in line so they could see different people. And then, now, Marcel brought up a great point, which was that kids want to emulate us. So I had to show them being confident, and I would open a friendly conversation. How are you? Oh, my boys and I are doing such and such. And so I would bring to the table, this is how we act in public. No, we don't throw tantrums in public. We interact. Oh, there's interesting people to meet. And so one was that I held the long view. I made sure that I was trying to put those skills together and that the children knew they were important, that the holding the family together doesn't just happen because I'm a superhuman person. It happens because we're a team. Mm-hmm. And when the team works together, the team also has bigger benefits. So one of the things I realized, for instance, is that my first inclinations would be to say things like, if you don't do this, I'm not going to have time to do that. I can't play with you tonight if you don't help. And you get that tone, right? And we all know that tone because we're tired and we're ready to whack them, but we don't want to. So, I mean, I had one kid who basically had the personality that he would dig in and say, that's fine. And he would wheel away and go away. And I've created an ultimatum that now I'm screwed because I can't negotiate it. I can't navigate it. So I learned to say things like, hey, I want to play a game so much. The faster we get this piece done, the more time we have for it. And then I would dig in and I would go for it. And I had to find things that helped me because I'm a good procrastinator. And so we ended up having a song that was from a movie of their dad's childhood called The Wizard of Speed and Time. And it's like a zippy little, you know, song that goes with the movie. And we would put it on to clean up because it made the kids want to zip around like the Wizard of Speed and Time. And it made us all happy for 3.5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And that's how we would move ourselves, which I would try to borrow from the environment to help all of us move in the direction that we needed. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
It does. And that's how you worked through your transitions. And this piece of being together, it's that you did it together. Because I think so often when I think of rhythm, I think of being basically like the conductor of the orchestra, you know, that I'm figuring out that this time period we do this and this time period we do that. And I don't think that that's really practical because there's not enough mental space to figure that out. And there's so many moving parts that you can't really do that. And I think what you and Marcel, and we sort of had this conversation, and he's an adult now, he's in college, talked about was that it's not necessarily about the parent directing everything. It's about communicating what's coming next and experiencing it together. So Marcelin said stability, because this is a child I think who very easily could have felt unstable. So divorce, my mom's gone in the morning. Sometimes I'm taking a taxi ride to school. There's cash on the table. I don't know when she's coming back, that type of thing. He said, stability is knowing what's next. That basically all the child really needs is the next step. So can you give an example? You were telling some examples to me of, you would say, I'm going here now, that, you know, you would sort of explain that this this is probably what's going to happen. Here's where we're going to reconnect at the end of it, that type of thing.
Yeah. One part is that, especially when they were young, I tried to put in rhythms that helped our day move along, because I found that my personality had problems with transition points. So I needed things that would cue the next thing. And if I had the right kind of, some of those transitions helpers, other people watching my kids could keep them in place. So their world would seem the same, even though the adults moved in and out. So we had gotten into the habit of like having fruit first thing in the morning when they got up, because I couldn't manage to get the food going fast enough, right? So that kind of helped them settle down. And so we'd have fresh fruit. And then after dinner, we would take up, they would take a bath, and then we would get in bed to read together. So even a babysitter could do those things, and it created starting and stopping points that kind of had some familiarity to it. And there was that. I think, you know, when Marcel said it's an avenue to adulthood, it's not just observing. And I think that's kind of what I wanted to do, was say, hey, look, I was in this really, this huge quandary, frankly, because my kids were without exception the most important thing in my life, which it is for a lot of us, of course, right? But I didn't have them till I was 37. I had been attending birth since I was 16. I cannot tell you how much I wanted my own baby in my arms. You know, it was a big deal. So to have my children, like, I wanted them to be a priority. I wanted them to know it. And yet, how could someone in labor always trump them? Mm. Somebody spotting on the phone, somebody having bleeding nipples, somebody's baby who was, we were concerned about. I was interrupting their life all the time for people who were not more important than them, but actually trumped them in that moment. So I was really striving to not be always apologizing.
And that is a tricky thing. I think that, and I think this is an important conversation, because everyone has that, right? I mean, I would never say my job is more important than my kids. This conference is more important than my kids. And yet those are pieces of life for many reasons that we attend to. One, obviously it's financial, because you know, you need the resources to sustain your family. But another is we do have these different callings on our life. And I think that we are meant to pursue them even while being a parent. That's an important piece of life too, is to show up for what you're supposed to be doing in the world. And that did leave some holes in your family, as it does in any family. But the cool thing that I thought, Beth, was that Marcellin talked about it in a way that really pointed toward resilience and maturity. So I think that any parent would think, oh, you know, maybe in the back of their mind, or maybe in the front of their mind, oh my goodness, I didn't get my kid on the bus. I didn't take my kid to school. I didn't even have any transportation available ready for them. I had to leave a $20 bill on the counter, and they had to figure out how to take a taxi and get to their school day. And yet, on the other hand, looking back, having this long view, you do see the benefit of this increased responsibility. So one of the things that you had talked about was that you would be able to say, look, you know, my kids know how to grocery shop. They know how to make a meal. So if they're stuck with a babysitter last minute, I'm running into a birth, take them to Trader Joe's. Here's $20. They're going to pick out what they're going to cook. And you see how that this independence in the long run, like, our holes often, I think, lead to independence. And one of your kids even wrote a college application essay about that.
Yeah. One of my kids got into college. One of their essays was on being kind of left to their own devices for all these different reasons for both parents. Their dad is does all kinds of performing and works in festivals. So the kids would go with him and end up being sort of turned loose to wander festivals and do stuff as long as they stayed together, right? So they had had a lot of space and autonomy from the beginning. For instance, we lived in the woods when the kids were first born and we were married there for like the first 6 or 8 years. We were living in the woods, and I was outside with them all the time. I didn't just tell them what they could do. And when I was outside with them, I was constantly showing them the boundaries. Here on the driveway, you can go to this tree. When I'm not outside with you, you can't go past this tree. And I would kind of, you know, like bring it up to them and stuff like that. And then they knew that they could go to the sitting rock, what we called it, you know, in that one spot. And we created stories. So I think stories are maybe a part of it, right? Because that the rock was flat and broad and at a curve in the bend of our driveway. So we'd go to it and like they would sit on it, because that was a thing a three-year-old would do. So it became the sitting rock. So I think that, you know, those the stories that we tell in our own families, the things like, for instance, when we come back together doing the same thing. Some families have a I love you kind of, they have their own little cute way of saying I love you, right? They have their own, they have a certain kind of hug, or they like Yeah, you know, they do their own thing. It has to fit the personality of the family and of the parent. That's the only way it's going to work. I would say I love the part you talk about, the being the conductor. The language I always used was trying to be the, I needed to be at the head of the parade. I felt like that it was like this merry band, and that the days would go better if I could be at the head of the parade. If the parade started with a 2 and 4 year old in the morning before I could get going, it was always really hard to get back in front of the parade, right? It's like you're trying, if you've ever, I used to try and take pictures in the parade because my husband, they had floats and they were performing and the kids were on them. So I would be like running along and trying to get ahead of them. It's very hard to get ahead of a parade once it's moving. So that was part of my idea, is if I could be, have it together enough to be at the front of the parade, it would help things fall into place. So for instance, when is the stress point for the family or in the chaos? If our chaos is in the morning, then we have to find it together to somehow make the sandwich ahead of time, stick it in the fridge, and have their book bag by the door. Because otherwise, 100%, something's forgotten, right? It's that kind of thing.
I like that. I like that metaphor. Over the conductor is not the right metaphor, because to me, the conductor is like, you do this, you do that. But the head of the parade is like, I'm out here leading the fun. And that is truly what a lot of what you talked about, which is that you're in it together. Hair thinning is complicated. The problem is, it's actually much bigger than your hair alone. Like your skin, hair is a reflection of your health, and internal factors can impact the way your hair looks, feels, and grows. Nutrafol's whole body approach multi-targets underlying root causes like stress, hormone fluctuations, and nutrient gaps for visibly thicker, stronger hair. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement, with over 1 million people seeing thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding. While many supplements rely solely on ingredient studies, Nutrafol clinically tests final formulations to ensure their efficacy. In a clinical study, 86% of women reported improved hair growth after taking Nutrafol Women's Hair Growth Supplement for only 6 months. Take the first step to visibly thicker, healthier hair. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code OUTSIDE. Find out why over 4,500 healthcare professionals and hairstylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com is spelled Nutrafol.com. Promo code is OUTSIDE. That's Nutrafol.com. Promo code OUTSIDE. Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples. In springtime, allergies can sometimes be my kryptonite. When my nose is plugged up and my eyes are watering, I feel like I struggle more to do the things I really enjoy. Making dinner, heading outside to get my sunlight before noon, and even hosting the show can be a bit more challenging. Luckily, for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. This double-action combination of prescription-strength allergy medication and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease. I've been taking Claritin D for my allergies for several years, and it's been an absolute life changer. My eyes aren't a constant, itchy, drippy faucet, my nose isn't running, and I can speak without feeling like something has jumped in my throat. And I love that Claritin D tackles nasal congestion caused by allergies or cold, and also relieves sinus congestion and pressure due to allergies. Ready to live life as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Use as directed. One of the things I thought was interesting is you never know when your life is going to lose the rhythm that you hoped it would have. And that's a situation that happened for you. And I think it happens for a lot of people for many, many, many different reasons. I mean, even for myself, I was expecting that like the baby years would be like this completely rhythmic. Here's the schedule at 8 a.m. and 10 a.m. I mean, you think it's going to be that. And then even if it's just because you had more than one kid, or you had one kid and that kid was colicky and cried a lot, you just don't have the sense of rhythm. And so things change over time. And you went through divorce. And these people that, you know, your sister who was very helpful, she passed away. And all of a sudden you're in this place that feels very unstable. But you had laid a foundation. And I think that that is an important thing too, especially if people are listening and they have young kids at this time. You laid a foundation for them when they were young. And that carried things through as well, and had some long-lasting benefits. So can you talk about when the boys were really young? You talk about screen usage, talk about sleep, talk about being outside and the play and pretend.
Sure. Oh, yeah. So I knew from, I'd had a lot of exposure to Waldorf educational traditions and some households like that along the way. So I had this big picture of how I wanted my household to be, which I struggled to aspire to my ideal, right? We all do. But I knew that if my kids had regular and good sleep, they would be more durable and healthier. I knew if they had really good food and good oils for their brain, I've been into nutrition since, you know, I was a kid. And I was raised with that part too. So I knew that if the kids had good nutrition, if they weren't just being fed fast food or, you know, crappy hot dogs with a lot of nitrates or something, that they would be doing better. So I was really aspiring to good food, not so much sugar. I was aspiring to getting enough sleep and getting that part down somehow. I had read somewhere at the time, I don't know what the current view is, but I had read that like Pavlov's dogs, when they heard the bell, they would start to salivate, right? After they'd been fed, that your kids, that if they had, for instance, were getting ready for bed at the same time every night, that it would be like Pavlov, like they would have, their body would start to release the going to sleep hormones and it would help you, right? It would like amplify your efforts. So, you know, we had had a tradition where at one point I had my toddler in my hand and we were going around and I was just like so weary, probably from being in a birth. I wanted to go to bed with him. And I was like turning out the light switches. And you know how our favorite kid books become part of our pattern. And it was like, oh, night, night. And it wasn't the night, night moon. It was somebody had said goodnight, saying goodnight on the farm was a book that I loved. And so I was like, oh, night, night living room. And, you know, it's a little kid who could barely do the light switch, but that was like a big thing, right? Mm-hmm. So we ran around every room and he got to turn off the light switch, night, night kitchen, night, night bathroom. I turned some of them on so he could turn them off. We turned off all the light switches on the way in. And by the time we got upstairs, he was just like melting because my voice got slower and slower. So creating, like aiming for food, aiming for sleep, aiming for outdoors. They were sometimes outdoors in their pajamas on a big pile of sand that had gotten delivered to have something else done that we didn't get around to it. So they were very industrious. That's where I got in the habit. At one point, I wanted them to be in the sandbox more, or the sand pile. So I buried, my dad called them chads. I don't know what they are, but they're like flattened marbles, right? They're the little glass things that are really pretty that are flattened. And it happened that we had a whole bunch of them because my dad was a collector of odd bits. And so I started putting them into putting things into the sand pile for them to discover. And like, oh, they'd be like, Mommy, look. I'm like, oh my goodness, the gnomes must have been busy. I wonder if there's any more treasure. So you can use your voice like, we'll go see. All right, let me know. This is exciting. And it went to the part where I tried not to tell my kids I was too busy. Because I got to tell you, in my head, I could cry right now. In my head, I was too busy. I was too busy to breathe. I was too busy, but everyone needed me to act not busy. My clients, I couldn't show up at a birth busy.
Wow.
You need your midwife to talk really calmly. You need your midwife to show up completely present for you. You need your midwife to not be thinking about her kid crying on the phone. That's really disruptive. And that was, you know, like that's some of the painful parts. It's like, trying to, like, there was a point where the kids were 10 and 12. I had to go to births. We lived in a co-housing at this point. So there was an adult who lived upstairs. It was a good friend, but the kids didn't want her to sleep on the couch, but she could be there for some, you know, they really needed her and all these. But so I was leaving them alone and they'd be going to sleep. I would be getting a call. They knew I'd be leaving. We were all anxious, right? And if I could not get them to sleep, I knew that one of my kids would not sleep if he hadn't gone to sleep by the time I left, but somebody has labor progressing. So how do you hurry going to sleep, right? So you have to like slow down. I got it so that I had a new CD with James Taylor and one with Tom Rush. This is, you know, 10 or 15 years ago. And it was my calming music. So I would have it on in the background while I got ready. It would kind of muffle the sounds of me pulling my bags together at the front door and get them scared. They knew that I was like, I might be going tonight. So when you wake up, there's going to be this and this and this. Your bag is going to be by the door. You're going to call me and I will tell you what's happening. Or if they were old enough, you know, you can read this note. And there'll be a note. They knew that if they came out, if I had to go to a birth and they didn't know it, I would have a piece of paper on the floor outside their room. So when they came out and it was written in magic marker and really bright with hearts and smiley faces, and it would say, at a birth, that's the joke in the family, at a birth, and call me, or at a birth, call dad, or at a birth, Laura's going to be here at such and such a time. And, you know, and your breakfast is on the table. So there was a point where we, when I tried to involve them at every stage. So for instance, when they were, I think, only 8 and 10, maybe, a babysitter that we didn't have food, you know what I mean? Like it was like grocery day and you know how that goes. And then all of a sudden it's a mess. So I had somebody who, like a 16-year-old, and I said, can you make the boys dinner? No, she did not know how. I'm like, okay, we're in a spot. And there was food allergies at the time. I didn't want to, you know, like it was complicated. So I'm like, okay, I've left 20. The boys know where the, you know, the fun money is, or this, you know, the emergency money. Like, go get a 20 and babysitter's going to take you to the store. Let's talk about what you're eating. And they're like, we want to make hot dogs. We would have organic. I'm like, okay, that sounds good. Do you know which aisle that's in? And literally my kids had to show the babysitter how to go. I'm like, now she has to be there when you turn on the stove, but she doesn't know how. So you're going to have to do it. And they would do it. So one of the ways I made that happen is, for instance, one of my kids went through a period where he was so picky about what he ate and his tummy hurt and all this stuff. Oddly, he loved sushi. Like, he wouldn't eat avocados, but he would eat avocado sushi. So, okay, that's a thing. So for his birthday or Christmas, something, I gave him coupons for making sushi. Because it's just going to be rice, right? And avocados and stuff. So I gave him a little kit that I had found somewhere at a sale. And the coupon was, every Tuesday night, we'll make sushi together. And the idea was, I knew he would eat well. And the next day, because he would like it, he and I would be in the kitchen together building relationship. It would make me cook and he would get those skills. So that was a lot of it. So instead of being busy, I tried to coach it as adventure. I said, I would say, today is a really big adventure day. Are you ready? And you know, you can make it sound fun, right? Like, as parents, all the parents listening, right? Parenting is all sales.
You did say that. You said that, I think, the first time. Parenting is all sales.
It's 90% sales. I can say, yeah, it can sound like, oh, this is such a busy day, guys. It's a hard day. I need you to get your stuff together. It's blah, 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 right? We all know how that voice is. And we all know how they act when you do it. But if I say, hey, oh my gosh, finally, so-and-so is having her baby. This is a big adventure day. You know, I don't know how long this one's going to last. So you're going to get to have some new adventures today. School's going to be just regular. I put the extra fun thing in your lunchbox. There's a special note with a joke. So get ready, because you're going to need to give me the answer to the joke when I see you next. I kept the book because I didn't know. And then when we get back together, we'll do our smoothies. So for instance, if transitions were hard, I would have a landing point that gave us both some help. Like, for instance, if they were with their dad and I had really different households, you know, really different rhythms or not, stuff like that. And the transition points became pretty edgy and scrappy. If I brought them right back to my house, it would become messy. They would be angry for a long time. We would be all yucky. But if I could somehow get it shaken off in between, I stopped at one point and we would start shaking to get off all like, oh, we're just wiggling. And then they caught on and they got really irritable and they wouldn't get out of the car. So then I wouldn't go straight home. I would go to the smoothie shop. We would get a smoothie and we had to walk around outside on the strip mall until the smoothies were gone. And that would allow us, you know, a transition point and we could come back. So I've used a lot of external things to create something that, like, to me, getting a smoothie was fun. Something that helped me parent them better. I don't know. But anyway, not busy, but adventure. Reframe it. Tone of voice. Have a few things that stay the same. And really make sure they have an idea what's happening. Not too many details for the little ones. Hey, you're going to be playing with so-and-so today. I'm not sure when we're getting back together. You might be having dinner there, or we might be having dinner together. But for sure, tomorrow, we're having granola for breakfast, you know, or something.
Yeah.
But, you know, we know that today's Tuesday, but on Friday is our movie day. So for sure, we're going to have our movie day. Let's see what happens today. I want you to keep track and tell me if you see anything blue today. I want to hear about all the blue things you see, okay? I'll call you later. I would try to create threads through our day so that there would be some shared experience, I guess. Sorry, I've gone off on a deep end here, but...
Well, I think this is it, though. I think this is what people want to hear. It's the head of the parade. What stands out to me, Beth, is that you have a depth to you, and you have drawn from that. You had a depth from your childhood experiences and your babysitting experiences, and you have observed, you have read, you have listened, you went to the Kim John Payne when he came to the schools, and you see that that helps a lot in life. And it's just a side thing. I don't think it's, you know, even the point of this conversation, but part of it is that when we are more attuned to what's going on and when we are having those thoughts of what do I really hope for my kids and I really want to like them and I want to have these thoughts. It starts even when you're a kid and there's kids that listen to the podcast. So maybe someone's listening and they're 10 or 12. And I remember going in and out of people's homes and noticing different things. And I think that's really good because we don't know where our path is going to take us. And you had things to draw from when you found yourself in a position that you weren't expecting to be in.
We love bread in our house. I mean, who doesn't? PB&Js, turkey sandwiches, even just morning toast with butter. It's all good in our home. We're always on the hunt for a healthy alternative. That's why our family loves Hero Bread. It is delicious. They make delicious bread and products free of consequences or compromise. They've made carby, empty calorie bread products into fluffy, delicious versions that include no net carbs, 0 grams of sugar, and fewer calories, plus protein and fiber. We love the classic white bread and the seeded bread, which are both made with olive oil and have a wonderful, rich taste to them. I was so surprised how soft both types of bread were. They were just the right blend of chewiness and sturdiness for making sandwiches. This bread is a favorite in our house for sure. The tortillas were also delicious, and we loved making simple cheese quesadillas as a snack. We're talking 0 net carbs, high in fiber, 0 grams of sugar. What more could you ask for? Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code OUTSIDE at checkout. That's code OUTSIDE at HERO.CO. This podcast is sponsored by Active Skin Repair, a 1% for the planet member who believes personal health and health of the environment are connected. If you spend as much time outside as we do, which we hope you do, or really any time outside at all for that matter, you're bound to have kids that get nicked, scraped, or banged up, or perhaps come in from outside with an unexplained rash, or maybe you end up on the wrong side of a fall or a bad scrape yourself. That's why we love Active Skin Repair. Active Skin Repair is an all-natural and non-toxic topical solution that is formulated to help repair and heal damaged skin. It can be used to treat a wide range of skin issues, including cuts, scrapes, but also burns, sunburns, rashes, and other types of skin damage. It works by mimicking the natural immune response to help soothe irritation, reduce inflammation, and support healing. It's also safe and non-toxic, making it suitable for use on all skin types, including sensitive skin. It's really easy to add to your first aid kit. As if all of that wasn't amazing enough, Active Skin Repair donates 1% of all sales to grassroots environmental initiatives to protect and restore our national world, which is super cool. Visit ActiveSkinRepair.com to learn more about Active Skin Repair and their commitment to 1% for the planet. You can use code 1000hours to save 20% on all Active Skin Repair products. That's ActiveSkinRepair.com. Let's hit one other topic of all of this, because we're talking about how to have rhythm when our life isn't rhythmic. And you've got a situation where you're a single parent, you have these two sons, you have family members that have passed, you don't have extended family around to step in and help, you have a job that's on call and takes you away for an indeterminate period of time, and also you're low on finances. So this is a recipe for really a major struggle. And yet, all these things you talk about, you were able to hold it together in a lot of ways to raise these boys that are stable as adults. Let's talk about the finance piece. Because if you have extra resources, you could be like, oh, well, we'll just order DoorDash and they're going to bring whatever it is that we want or whatever the thing is. I've never ordered DoorDash. I don't even think they deliver to where we live. But there are options, right? If you've got the finances for it, there are different things that you can do. How do we have all of these things going on when money is also really tight?
Well, you know, for those of us that have been in that situation, it is so incredibly stressful. And it's hard to appreciate it. We always feel like no one knows how hard it is, right? There were points where I was attending births, but I was borrowing salt. And there was a point, you know, after the, you know, I was like trying to scrape together the money for first and last for an apartment and, you know, doing it all on my own and shifting to being the money earner and not just, you know, doing births in that other way. And it's very stressful to the adult. And so part of that is that if kids are going to emulate us, we have to find ways to do our best to stay stable as well. So when I'm going on about like, we have to get outside for at least 3 minutes, first sun on our forehead, first thing in the morning. I mean, I tried to return to a meditation practice for I bet a decade before I could somehow pull it off with my kids without them interrupting me. Like, even though they were respectful in this net, the little ones would wake up if I was awake. And, you know, it just was hard. So at the time, I relied on a lot of used things. So for me at the time, church sales were the thing because there was a lot of quality there that wasn't being found in some of the resale shops and stuff. You know, I wanted my kids to have this chance to be really creative and to be playful. I knew that they needed ingredients. I didn't have money. Oh my gosh, the beautiful toy catalogs that were out there at the time, right? A lot of them are pretty well known now. And you've even had on some of the, like, the Bella Luna Wonderful Woman, like, beautiful things. And it was just like, that was not happening. And we were working on the food and the gas. So, but I could scrap together my $20 or whatever and go to a church sale. And what I would do is, instead of trying to buy, like, beautiful costumes at the department store for Halloween, or, you know, their dad was in theater and stuff. I grew up watching Mr. Dress Up, which I didn't know was from Canada, but he was like my hero. And he had the tickle trunk, you know, with the costumes. So I would go to the church sales. And that was this thing that was fun for me, is that the garage sales, I would be looking for things that could be anything, right? The hilariously over the done 60s belt, but it could be a Viking belt. And an old lady scarf, but it was like the most amazing color. And it could, you know, I got a red silk scarf at one of those things. My children still wear it as their waist thing when they're pirates to perform now. It's 15 years later. I got Mardi Gras beads one time, and I have some of my favorite pictures of my toddler is squatting, holding a million Mardi Gras beads that he's been playing with all morning, you know. And I would look for, you know, vests and pieces of fur or piece of, you know, pretend fur or, you know, and so we had a huge costume box. It probably hadn't cost me $20 altogether. It kind of rotated. And so they were constantly reinventing what they were doing. So I used the outdoors because that's God's playground. That's the best place. I knew that checked all my boxes, right? Checked coordination. It checked cooperation. It checked giving me a break so I didn't want to yell at them. It checked strength, it checked coordination. We can go, you say these things all day long. You can, you know, we all know these. So outdoors, check the box. Creative play that was cheap, check the box. Good food. So I put my money in a certain category. I would buy quality shoes so that they had the right soles and would help their brain. We need softer soles whenever you can. And then they just wanted to go barefoot. So that kind of solved that problem. But I would buy organic butter, because I knew that would feed their brain, even though it's like buying gold bars. And then, you know, I would buy other stuff in bulk and, you know, do what I can stretch. You know, we all know about stretching budgets. But the other thing is that our kids mostly want us. So honestly, being outside with my kids together was way more valuable to my kids than the highly polished present they were getting, you know, from a relative or something. It's the memory. So I'll give you an example. This is a kind of a wild one. We have a couple. So there was a point, the boys were fairly young. I would say like 9 and 11, 10 and 12. Like, they were just barely old enough to legally be alone. Mm-hmm. I knew they could handle it. It was Christmas time, and a whole bunch of things happened at once, in which some people went overdue. Some people had come along and come into my practice right, even though they were due for different reasons. I decided to take them on. My assistant had to leave, like, for holidays for a couple of days. Their dad went out of town for the holidays. I had insisted on having the kids for the holiday. And all of a sudden, I had a bunch of people due. I had kids who were counting on Christmas in the ways that we did it. And I was a little bit nervous. I went to the library. I got a couple of new movies I thought they could handle. And I got a couple of old familiar ones that would make them feel safe if I wasn't home. I got a couple bags of the fun stuff that I don't usually splurge on, but just in case. I got good quality other food and, like, made it and put together a whole bunch of other stuff. At one point, the year that we moved out into our own space from our marriage home a week before Thanksgiving, it was that much needed to happen. So it was kind of a rough time, and there was hardly any money to do that Christmas. What I did was, I had the store at the time, and we had a Norfolk pine, one of those 3-foot Norfolk pines in the store. Mm-hmm. So I put it in the back seat of the car, in the back, covered it up with a blanket. And so when the kids were asleep on Christmas Eve, I brought it into the house, kind of like a Laura Ingalls Wilder moment. I had bought $5 half price from Michael's, the little miniature bulbs, mm-hmm. and I had one string of lights. I spent less than $10 at Michael's. I did that, and they had a few wrap things. That's where I started to invent coupons, because I thought I would have money coming up. And we had coupons and we had all these fun things. We're going to have a coupon for sledding next month and stuff like that. That was not going to cost anything. And I wrote about this actually on my blogs. And when they woke up, I told them that the gnomes had brought a tree and decorated it for us. And they still talk about this as their most favorite Christmas almost. And to me, it was the one I was the most embarrassed about. Felt like I barely made it through. I was terrified. They completely bought my voice and this little magic thing that happened. You know, it didn't have to be the grand scale. That's the nice thing about them not having screens, by the way, and being off screens. This is a big piece. We should emphasize this. Because they did not have a phone, they did not have screens at this stage, 2012, you know, that kind of time. Mm-hmm. The scale was scalable. I could make their world what I chose. They did not see some impossible scale all over that they're watching with everybody else. So the other story I was getting to was that in this Christmas time, this other Christmas, somebody called. So I was just settling in with them. They were the focus. But somebody called on Christmas Eve day in labor. It's a long story, but their midwife was ill. No one knew. They couldn't find her. The family had had a lot of home births. So there was experienced people around, but this was a first time mom. And basically they're like, somebody said, you're a midwife. Can you help us? I'm like, I really can't. I have kids. I have people do. Mm-hmm. Call these people. By the end of the night, they're calling me going, I think she's getting ready to push, but we still haven't gotten anybody. Everybody's gone for the holiday. I'm like, oh man. So I tell the kids, I have to go. And they're kind of upset. But it sounded like I was going to deliver a baby and come right back, right? And I said, look. So I turned it into adventure. I said, you know, sometimes we have to do things that are hard. Like we have to do the right thing, even though it's not that comfortable. And so what would be a kid thing, right? I said, you get to sleep, get your sleeping bags. You guys get to sleep. Not you have to. You guys get to sleep under the Christmas tree with the lights on. And you actually get to watch movies as long as you want until you fall asleep in front of them. Because we didn't usually do that, right? Mm-hmm. I said, and here's your bag of popcorn that I had bought. And so they went to bed. It became a big story for all of us. In this case, things went on. I was with that mom for 24 hours. It was very stressful. It ended up being a transport. And in the meantime, the kids woke up in the morning and they're like, Santa Claus didn't come. There's nothing in the stockings. Where are you? I'm like, I'm still with this mom. It's Christmas. I said, Santa knew that I wasn't available, like that I wouldn't be there to help you open it. So I know that Santa's going to come when we're there. And it became a thing where they called every couple of hours and then they were crying. Why aren't you here? It's like, you know, yeah. And I'm trying to help someone else. So we worked it out. I found somebody who came and helped them make sandwiches and they watched a lot of movies and stuff. And then when I got home, the family had paid me in cash. I'd made some money and we really needed it because I didn't have much that day. And I said, here's what happened. I said, we really needed money. And, you know, that was heard. That message was heard. And this family needed help. And I was a person that had that. It was my job. Your job was to keep safe. And you did a good job, too. So I reframed it. I'm like, and all the way home, I was like, how do I make this not the worst story of their entire life and tell their dad that I abandoned them on Christmas? So when I came home, I gave them each $100 bill. These are 8 and 10 year olds or 10 and 12 or something. I hand them each $100 bill. I say, we each had to do our big, big work. It was super hard. It was not what we chose, but it was the right thing. And sometimes you have to do right things. So I made money that I needed to help us that I didn't know I could make. And you earned some money too. And actually that was their Christmas, was that they got this $100 bill. Mm-hmm. And now the young one remembers that as the Christmas he slept under the Christmas tree. Yeah. The older one remembers it as the best Christmas ever. He got a $100 bill.
Wow.
My suggestion about the money is let's reframe it. Let's look for solutions. Let's remember that our local library, a lot of times has stuff you can borrow for free, games and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You make stories. You make adventures.
Yeah. Beth, it's really empowering and hopeful to hear your story. And like I said, we talked about rhythm and it's like, oh yeah, of course. And she's a midwife. She's got this calming voice. Of course, rhythm. But then they're like, oh, wow, she had a lot coming at her and was able to hold that for the whole family. And Marcellin said, stability comes from being capable. And when you're walking it together, the capacity for different skills increases. And so sometimes and oftentimes those things that we see as gaping holes where we have failed has given our children opportunity to become a more capable person. And that helps them to be stable. So you did it together. There are so many things. I think this conversation, there's going to be so many different things that people can draw from that they could say, oh, I could do this today. Let's cook together a little bit more. Let's talk through what's going to happen from start to finish. Where are we going to come back together? How can I say it in a way that's an adventure that sets the stage? I'm going to lead that parade, you know, so that our life feels a certain way. And these things, I think when you're in the middle of it, Beth, like you don't know how it's going to turn out. You just hope. And so for me, I've gotten to see, you know, I've known your boys for, we just talked about it, right? I've known you for over 13 years. And so I knew of your boys, and we didn't get closer until a ways down the road, but knew of your boys when they were small. And I've been around, you know, as they've graduated high school and gone off on ski trips and built relationships and moved out and tried different things and internships. And you can see now that these boys are very stable, and it didn't take having a perfect situation, the right amount of money, the right amount of time, the perfect type of job, the perfect type of family around. It didn't take that to get them there. And in fact, it was actually quite the opposite. So Beth, I always love talking to you. I wanted to let people know where they can find you. So on your website, indigoforest.com, they're going to find the spot where they can do the Ask the Midwife questions, but there's a lot of other things there. You have a store where you sell things like the herbal baths, which are great for anything. It's obviously good for postpartum, but it's great for if you've got kids with rashes and different types of things. So those are fantastic to get. We keep those on hand. You have courses. So one of the ones that I think is very pertinent to parents is called Get Well Soon. And this is going through all of the typical ailments that can happen in childhood and what can you do first in your home. It's very comprehensive. You get so many amazing feedback quotes and things people send in about that course. And I can attest, I mean, you get stuck sometimes. It's a Friday at 6 p.m. Nothing's open. What are you going to do? You're going to go to your Get Well Soon course. It comes with a guide and all sorts of things. So you're going to find that there, your newsletter, where you send out pertinent information on a regular basis about all the things that families are needing to know now. You have coming soon a childbirth ed class, which is so phenomenal, an amazing resource for families. And once that comes, we'll hop back on and talk to parents about what that is and what they're going to be able to find there. And just all sorts of ideas. Your blog is like, what do I buy my friends for the holidays? I mean, it you know, it ranges from, you know, are these diapers the right thing? I mean, it's like the whole gamut. And so people want to check that out, indigoforest.com. Make sure you sign up for the newsletter. You can pop over, use the link below that's in the show notes for Asking the Midwife. And you can check out the Get Well Soon class, to herbal baths. There's lots there. Thanks for being here.
Jenny, thank you so much for having me. And thank you for being that voice of reason and that voice of adventure and that voice of hope, because I lean on what you produce and who you talk to. And it really makes a big difference for all of us that we can share our voices to be stronger and that we can lean on them to get inspiration. So it's a wonder to be here. Thank you so much.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play. And we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.